Hello and welcome to Ask the Mayor on WBAA. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Thanks for being with us on the show this week. Our guest is Crawfordsville Mayor Todd Barton, and if you'd like to get your questions in to him, you can do that by calling in at 765-496-1999. You can send an email to ask@wbaa.org, and you can tweet your questions at WBAA News on Twitter. Mr. Mayor, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you.
Thanks, as always, for joining us. I wanted to start by talking a little bit about an update you gave recently on your Stellar Communities projects. There were a number of interesting things, I thought, in this month's update. One of them was that the Pocket Park, which we've talked a little bit about on this program, has broken ground. How long do you think that's going to take to finish, assuming the weather cooperates?
Well, we're looking probably August, maybe even September. It's partially dependent on the weather, and believe it or not, the other factor that we've heard consistently from everyone who bid this project, the other factor is the labor pool, you know, and how many employees, you know, a vendor can get and how that works. So we're looking at late summer, depending on the weather and you know, how many people show up to work, I guess.
And so in terms of how many people show up to work, is that something you're really having a problem with?
That is absolutely. You know, we spend a great deal of our time. Economic development right now is really focused on workforce. And we pull together our 17 largest employers every month. In fact, we met this morning and talking about real-world challenges in the workforce area and trying to identify some positive steps we can take in our community. And we know this challenge or this problem is not isolated to Crawfordsville, Indiana. Everyone's kind of going through this. But we want to be proactive and be out ahead of the pack, if you will, in how we address that, and we are. So, yeah, that's not uncommon to hear, you know, from trade and industries. Look, we just don't we want the job, we want to do the work, but we don't have the workers, and, you know, we'll get to it when we can.
One stellar project that it seems like is going to need a reboot of sorts is the Ben-Hur building. The owner of that property has given it back to the county. Is that right?
That's correct. And, you know, a lot of people read that and thought, oh no, this is probably a negative thing. Actually, it was a very positive thing. And maybe we didn't do a good job of explaining that to people. But, you know, originally it had been handed to a developer based on the back taxes situation. When that occurs, the developer has to really lay out the exactly what they're going to do in a very clear timeline and, you know, performance objectives that have to be met. And the reality was they were not meeting those, and there was absolutely no way at this point they could come close to meeting those. So they chose to forego the formal process of the county recalling that property and bringing it back and instead just sign it over to the county. So that saved us a lot of time, a lot of money. You know, a lot of months were cut off that process by them doing so, and I appreciate them doing that. That now allows the county to move forward with you know, going with another developer and going through the process again. And while that might be frustrating, that's just the reality that you face in these kinds of projects. And the important thing is to be persistent. You know, if you've identified a developer and you move down this path and it doesn't work, then step back, reboot, and go again. And that's exactly what we're doing. So we're confident there are some good potentials out there, and I think you'll see some movement there in a couple of months. To put this in the hands of a new developer and begin moving forward again.
The building obviously needs some work. That was obvious as you were taking the people from Okra and us journalists around a few years ago, taking a look at it. Was there ever an assessment by the developer or the county or anybody else that maybe it needed more work even than was originally thought?
Actually, it was the contrary. You know, the assessment came back from this original developer that it was going to take a little less than what they thought. The exterior of the building was actually in better shape than originally thought as they moved through this. So, you know, there's some terracotta issues and things like that. They did invest in securing the building, so they fixed some of those issues, and we were able to get the safety tape removed from around the building and so on. So they did some of that. It's been stabilized somewhat, and obviously a lot needs to happen, but it wasn't a situation where this was worse than they thought. I think it was just a situation where their business plan was not coming together as far as investors and grant funding to make the project work.
Your update says that the plans for the building are still pretty similar. There's supposed to be a restaurant and a hotel, among other things. What do you think the timetable is right now on actually getting either or both of those open?
Well, you know, I'm not going to, I don't know, it's hard to say, but, you know, certainly it's going to take probably at least a couple of years. You know, if we are able to get this in the hands of a new developer now, you're kind of resetting the clock, and you got to kind of figure maybe a year behind the scenes stuff. I don't like that, but, that's reality. A year behind the scenes of putting together their financing and those types of things, and then you start getting into construction, and that's probably a year at least. So being very optimistic, I would say 2 years, maybe even 3 years before something like that is actually a reality.
It occurs to me that one thing Crawfordsville doesn't have many of, if any of, are sort of upscale dining spots downtown or elsewhere. The building, it seems like, could be very nice. I remember you talking about having kind of a rooftop garden type feel at one point. I don't know if that's still on the table, but do you view this as a place that could be a destination dining sort of spot if it's done right?
Well, it certainly could, and that's the key, if it's done right, you know, And obviously that decision will be left up to the business side of this, and they'll really have to look at the market and see what they think the market will or will not support. It's very interesting, you know, when we show that building and we have investors or developers in town and they're looking at that building, they always comment about how accessible it is. And it's the exact opposite argument you hear from locals who say, nothing will work in that building, there's no parking, and it's terrible. And they have the complete opposite view. So I find that very interesting and fascinating, and you try to sort that out. But it's all relative to what you're used to, I guess. But, the market will dictate what will end up there and what will be successful. We just have to create the right environment to nurture it.
This is Ask the Mayor on WBAA. We're talking today with Crawfordsville Mayor Todd Barton. Send us your questions via email to ask@WBAA.org. You can tweet them at WBAA News on Twitter, or you can call in at 765-496-1999. This Saturday, your police department is going to do something that might be seen by some as a little controversial. You're going to do a gun buyback program. Is this in response to some of the recent mass shootings? Is this something you were planning on doing anyway? How did it come about?
Well, this project actually belongs to one of the area churches. This is their process. It's their program. They wanted to do this. The Crawfordsville Police Department's role is simply to make sure or ensure that we have a safe environment when this is happening. And you're right. I mean, there's a lot of controversy involved and a lot of different opinions on this, but ultimately for me it comes down to, this is they want to do this. It's legal for them to do this. I just want to ensure that it's a safe environment, and that's police officers are volunteering their time to be there to make sure that if a weapon comes in loaded, that it's properly unloaded, and that nothing goes wrong and nobody's hurt or anything like that in this scenario. So. The police department's role is pretty limited to just that, making sure that it's safe. Everything else is being organized and carried out, if you will, by one of the local churches.
So this sounds like it doesn't have a lot of cost, if any cost, to the city?
It has zero cost to the city.
Do you think this is an event that more cities should hold, or that you should hold more frequently, even if it does mean some volunteer off time for your law enforcement officers?
Well, I'm not sure. There's a lot you can read into this from both different angles, and you can spin it a lot of different ways. I largely think that we give people the opportunity, if for some reason they find themselves with a firearm they don't want, we give them the opportunity to get that taken care of. And, I'm not sure that this is something that necessarily will be well used that day. In talking to the organizers, I don't think they see it that way either. I think they just want to make a statement and give people the opportunity, if for some reason they have something that they don't want and they want to see that it's properly disposed of and doesn't fall in the wrong hands. So I don't think there's going to be much to it. I think it's going to come and go. This was done in our community, I don't know how long ago, but many years ago. The dynamics have changed so much since then on both sides of this argument. I just don't see that much will come of this.
What do you mean when you say that dynamics have changed on both sides?
Well, certainly there's more gun violence. I mean, we've seen the mass shootings and stuff like that go up, which has ratcheted up the conversation and the debate, which in turn has, ratcheted up the Second Amendment argument. So I think it's at a much, much more elevated level than it was all those years ago when a gun buyback program was put in place and carried out here. So totally different dynamics today. And like I said, it's garnered some attention, or I should say it's probably garnered more attention outside the community than it has within the community. And we kind of monitor social media stuff, and you see some bantering around about it. But we're just going to, we're going to let the church have their right to offer to buy weapons. That's certainly their right to do so. We're just going to ensure that it's a safe environment and that, nothing, bad happens or unintended consequences when it happens.
Along those lines, are you preparing at all for the possibility of protesters or people making a public display of displeasure that this is going on?
Well, that's a process that's left up to the Carville Police Department and their professionalism. I'm sure they will make those assessments and determine what they need or not need to do. I've not heard anything that leads me to believe that we're going to have issues like that. And certainly people are free to protest and say that they don't like something. As long as there's not violence and we don't break any of the laws, I think everything should go well.
You and I haven't talked about firearms very much in this program, and I don't know that I've ever asked you. Are you a gun owner yourself?
Well, actually, I am, yes.
And what led you to make that decision?
Well, that's something for a lot of people that, in my case, goes back to my childhood. I mean, I grew up, in a rural setting, and firearms were part of growing up and part of, you were taught how to, deal with firearms. You were taught responsibility and how to properly handle firearms. My father was a police officer, so certainly there were firearms in our home. And it's something that's just carried through in life with me. So, I think firearms in and of themselves are not the problem. The problem is everything else that's happening in society. And I always go back to the same thing. In our world today, everyone wants to exercise the right to express themselves, and that's wonderful. But very few people are willing to exercise their responsibility to actually listen to others. And as a result, those who are trying to exercise their right to express themselves get louder and louder, and in some cases, more dangerous. And I think that's what you see manifesting in our society. So I think it's more of a root, I think of the problem more of the root cause than I do what we see on the surface with the guns.
Do you think that this event on Saturday is an opportunity to try to have a conversation where two sides might try to bridge some gaps, or do you see it as a possible manifestation of that divide you just talked about?
Well, I see this, and sadly, as more of a manifestation of that. But I do think, however, that there is some room to start having some discussion, because in reality, I don't think the two sides are worlds apart. I mean, there are some fundamental differences there, but I don't think they're worlds apart. And I think we, at some point, can start having some productive discussions, again, if people are willing to listen to others instead of just coming in and pounding their fist on the table. And, you have to sit down and listen to try to, not saying you're going to agree with what other people are saying, but at least get a sense of where they're coming from. And I think that's a good place to start. So I think the door's open to that, and that's certainly a much bigger issue than just what we have here locally.
On to other things. I also wanted to check in on your city's Human Rights Commission, which we talked a lot about as you were getting it reconstituted. What's been the progress of that now that they've had a couple of months to sort of get themselves organized? I was having trouble finding any past agendas on the city's website, so I thought I would check in with you.
Yeah, we've had a little bit of a breakdown in making sure that their agendas and minutes get posted, and I think we've gotten that fixed as of just a few weeks ago. It's interesting, it took them about a year, and we expected this, to kind of get their legs under them, if you will, and kind of get a sense of what they were going to do or not do. And I think they're getting there now. It was interesting, their last meeting, a week or two ago, the observer from the League of Women Voters came up to me and said, this is the first meeting that I feel like they've gotten a sense of what they're doing, and I think it's coming together. So it was nice to hear an outside observer, make that conclusion. And they spent a lot of time looking at what other communities are doing and really a lot of time trying to gauge or understand where we are in our community. And you'll hear a lot of, well, I've seen this, or I've seen that, or I've heard this, or heard that. And this group has really dug in and really tried to really sort out fact from fiction and really analyze and measure where we are today. And they're now having a discussion about how we move from where we are today to where maybe where we want to be or to the ideal. And they've been doing little things here and there, so it is coming together, and I think this group has finally, found their footing, if you will.
What's the next big thing you want them to do?
Well, I think the public education piece is really the biggest, and it's interesting. They are engaging in a conversation right now with our Chamber of Commerce about engaging the business community in this conversation as well. And that is kind of where we're headed. And, my message to them has been pretty clear that, if we want to involve all segments of our community in the future of our community and the planning of our community and how we govern our community, at some point those segments, different sections, or you will, of our community have to step up and get involved. And that's where I'm really looking to them right now to help us do that, because we don't have people stepping up from, different segments of our community who are willing to get involved, serve on boards and commissions, roll up their sleeves and get to work. And that's the next step.
This is Ask the Mayor on WBAA. We're talking today with Crawfordsville Mayor Todd Barton. You've got about 10 more minutes to get your calls in to him. Telephone number 765-496-1999. You can email questions to ask@WBAA.org or tweet them at WBAA News on Twitter. I noticed that your city, like Lafayette, is forming a bicycle pedestrian committee, and I was curious whether it came about there sort of like it did here, where people were saying that the roads were sort of becoming a little unsafe for anybody who wasn't in a car. Was that part of your discussion as well?
Yeah, ours has been born out of a couple of things, and I think that's part of it. And then I think looking to the example that they've seen in the greater Lafayette area helped fuel that as well. And there's been a sense here for a while that bicycling in this community is, risky. I mean, it can be dangerous, and I've spent a lot of time cycling myself, so I can agree with that. I've had some close calls within the city of Crawfordsville. So, it's kind of those things coming together. And there are several groups in our community who are really into cycling and really promoting it, and they've kind of come together and want some input on what we're doing. So the city developed a bicycle and pedestrian master plan several years ago, and we used that as part of our Stellar proposal. And we're now ready to really start implementing and taking that to the next level. But this group recognizes that somebody has to advocate on behalf of this interest, because what typically happens is this moves through and, it's dollars and cents and people are looking at whatever's easy or what's going to cost the least. And, you'll have those interests come forward. You'll certainly have people there who would never think of touching a bicycle, who don't want this cost included. They've recognized that if they want these things included in projects, they're going to have to be here to argue on that behalf. And that's exactly what they're planning to do.
And I see where next month you're having some folks in from Lafayette to do a presentation. What do you want to learn from them?
Well, obviously, we want to see what's worked well and what hasn't. Let's learn from their experience, and just use that model. Now, certainly, we'll have to tweak it to our community, a different size community, some different dynamics. But we can learn a lot from what they've done, and maybe just not make some of the mistakes if they've made some. We'll learn from those for sure.
On to other things, I wanted to ask you a little bit about the Republican Senate primary that's going on between Mike Braun, Luke Messer, and Todd Rokita. Sort of close to home, I guess I'd be remiss if I didn't mention that you, as well as Congressman Rokita and Messer, share an alma mater there in town, and Wabash College has been invoked at least once on the campaign trail. Congressman Messer noted that he and Congressman Rokita were at Wabash at about the same time, and he believes, I guess Congressman Messer does, that at least in his estimation, Congressman Rokita still behaves the same way he did when he was in college. I wanted to ask you, as an alum and as somebody who's the mayor of the city, how you think that reflects on the school, on the community, things like that?
Well, you know, I think, I'm not positive, but I think all three of them are Wabash graduates. I believe Mike Braun is as well. So that's an interesting dynamic, and I don't think he's kind of really put that out there much, but I think all three of those candidates are hail from Wabash. I'm not sure. I didn't watch the second debate. I did watch most of the first debate, and so I can't speak to the second one, but I will tell you in the first one, I'll be honest, I was a little embarrassed by the behavior across the board. We need to talk about issues. You know, we need to get to the issues, and, you know, sadly, these candidates, these guys have drifted off course, and it's all about he said this or he did that, or, you know, get back to the issues. Tell me what you're going to do or not going to do and where you stand on some of these core issues. And I'm not sure, you know, I don't know. I don't know what to say about them all being from Wabash other than, you know, I did myself make a reference to, you know, a frat party and an argument. So it's tough. I'm not sure that they're on course with what they're doing.
You are far from the only person who has mentioned that, far from the only Republican I've heard mention that, and I wanted to ask you a little bit about it. Congressman Messer and Rokita are each trying to position themselves as the closest ally to President Trump in this race. You mentioned on this program shortly after the 2016 election, you didn't vote for President Trump or for Secretary Clinton, either of the two biggest candidates in that race. I wanted to ask, do you think it's a smart move for a Republican who's seeking statewide election this year to hew very closely to the president, who is historically unpopular?
Well, I think you're seeing candidates try to ride a wave, and, you know, the question is going to be where that wave is right now, if it still is what it was at that time. If it is what it was, you know, during that presidential election, then they probably have made the right call. If it's not, they've made a terrible miscalculation. And I don't know. I don't know that I have a sense of really where that wave is right now or not. And I say that because I have very little confidence today in polling and in what we're told in the mass media about the sentiment of middle America. I think we saw in that election that they were dramatically off. They weren't even close. They weren't even in the same, you know, universe. So I have a lot of trouble getting a sense of that other than what I hear in my community. And it's very divided. It is very divided. So are they making the right call by aligning themselves? I'm not sure. It's going to depend on, you know, if that mood has shifted or not.
We mentioned the Wabash College campus a second ago. I wanted to mention that it's part of a recent designation by the state. It's one of 156 economic opportunity zones that the state has put together. What does that designation allow you to do with the land that's on the western and northern part of your city?
Well, I guess the very truthful answer at this point is we don't know. we're still sorting through that. We saw that come up, and we certainly thought it looked like an opportunity. We started exploring it, and we put in a request. And I'm grateful that we've been chosen. We have some ideas. We think it opens up some funding sources, or at least probably removes some barriers that might otherwise be in place to development. And we're really focused on redeveloping some of those areas. And I think this will open the door, from what I've seen, this will open the door for us in doing so. It's really early in that process, so I don't have a strong sense of, you know, how powerful this will or will not be. But hopefully here in the next few months, we'll get a sense of that.
I was taking a look at the map before the show, and it was interesting that there's very little land east of about 231 that's included in this economic opportunity zone. It's west where the campus is. It goes up north along 231. What does that mean for one side of the city versus the other?
Well, it's a small community, and when one area gets developed, it's certainly going to affect the entire area. A lot of these things are done with these census tracts, and they're kind of hard to follow sometimes. It's kind of hard to understand why the line is where it is and why these decisions are made. But, I think we're small enough that even if, you know, investment is made on the other side of 231, it's still going to benefit people on the eastern part, if you will. So It is interesting in how it is drawn just from the perspective that, you know, our east side has struggled more than our west side. I mean, that's just reality. But you see this come out, and it looks like, you know, the reverse of that. So the entire community will benefit. We just kind of have to see where we're at in that process and learn more.
Do you think your experience with Stellar and with having that kind of put you at the front of the line for grants and other opportunities helps you navigate this economic opportunity zone program at all?
Well, it certainly doesn't hurt, you know, and I think the more experience we get with these kinds of things, the better we are at it. But also, you know, you improve your credibility, if you will, with the state agencies and with the decision makers. They understand that you are out there and you are working hard in working to make things happen, and they're more willing to extend an opportunity to you than, say, you know, a community that's just kind of sitting back and waiting on people to hand them, you know, what they need to succeed. You get attention and you get noticed when you're out there trying to create solutions and solve problems. And I think that helps us probably as much or more than anything.
Lastly, in just our last couple of minutes here, I noticed where the head of your city's electric utility has been elected chairman of the board of the Indiana Municipal Power Agency, which helps to advocate for and do coordination between several smaller municipal power entities like the one in your city. How do you think that might help you to have that kind of voice at the table?
Well, we're very proud of Phil and what he's doing and to lead that organization. It's a large organization, you know, and a lot of member communities. You know, when you have, again, that credibility of your person kind of running that, it helps. And certainly he's looking out for the good of all, but he will also be, you know, representing our community and helping put our best foot forward. So IMPA has done some amazing things, and to have him leading that group for the next 3 years will be good for Crawfordsville. It also means we have to adapt a little because he's going to be gone a little more than normal, but he has an amazing staff in place, and I'm sure they'll pick up the slack and do really well with it. So we're really excited to have him there, hoping it maybe brings some opportunities our way, but we'll have to see how it goes.
What sorts of opportunities do you mean?
Well, IMPA is very engaged in economic development, and obviously they're very engaged in the solar process. So, you know, as those opportunities are distributed around the state, it's nice to have the chairman, you know, on your side when they look at doing that. But, you know, I know other communities have done very well when their leader, somebody from their community is chairing. So we don't expect, you know, like special treatment, but it's nice to be at the front of the line or at least be recognized. And keep in mind, we're not the largest community in that group. We're like the third largest.
All right. Well, Mr. Mayor, thanks as always for your time. We've run out of the time we have on the program this month, but how about we do it about 4 weeks from now?
Sounds good.
All right. Thank you. Thanks so much. This has been Ask the Mayor on WBAA. Remember, you can find all of these shows archived at our website. That's WBAA.org. And if you've got a question to email any of our four mayors, send that note to ask@WBAA.org, and we'll get it on the next time that mayor is on the show. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Support for WBAA comes from your membership and Encompass Credit Union, supporting Ask the Mayor and offering a full line of financial services to the people of Clinton and Tipton counties while supporting the communities they serve. More information at EncompassCU.org.